Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 1:11:18. Well, is there a new world order forming? And what happened to the old new world order? Did that just go away? I don't know the answer to that, but hey, first, be part of the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, or use the Twitter feed @KerryLutz. So what about this emerging new world order? Gordon T. Long is with us. Gordon, welcome back.
Thank you, Kerry. Nice to be back. Been a while. Happy New Year.
You too there. So what is this new world order?
Well, Kerry, how can I net it out? The new world, I've been writing thesis papers here for at least 15 years now. I do one annually. And, you know, I can remember doing in 2010, it was on extend and pretend and how it evolved. In 2012, I did it on financial repression and how it evolved. So I kind of do these papers, and they're pretty extensive. You know, it's, you know, anywhere from 70 to 180 pages. But the point I'm getting to is that they're usually ahead of the fact. They're usually 2 or 3 years before they finally start to really unfold. And this year's, why this, you said it, we were talking pre-show. This year, the thesis paper is the new world order. And in talking about changes in sovereignty, exchange and trade methodologies, governance, institutions, and how they're going to change and why they're going to change. And as a framework on that, Kerry, I used to have a site called Tipping Points, but I continue to run Tipping Points at MATA SII, and I have about 44 of them that we track quite extensively. And we take those, and those tipping points right now range from stock valuations, the bond market bubble, the China hard landing, geopolitical risks, U.S. dollar, de-dollarization, et cetera. So they're a really broad base. But the point here is that we take those and those themes that are changing, and then we roll them, those tipping points, and then roll them into themes and kind of consolidate them through a process, a very technical process called abstraction. And then we build them, and then we start to see what should and can or is likely to unfold from that. And that's a backdrop where all this stuff has actually, for the last 3 years, has been pointing at certain things that are going to happen. And one of them was this new world order. It's just this year we kind of got around to saying, hey, it's now time to write on this. By the way, there's another one that's really looming out called a fiat currency collapse, which is really starting to show in a lot of the buildups of the themes. I didn't mean to bore you with that kind of detail, but it's not something we just pull out of the air and say, oh, this sounds like a great subject. In many ways, we're almost forced to write about it because of everything in these tipping points and themes that are actually pointing us at it.
Yeah. So what does this new world look like exactly?
Well, I think you could start by thinking of the internet. You can start by thinking of cryptocurrencies and why blockchain technology itself is so rapidly catching on. It begs the question of the fallacy of fiat currencies and the problems that it's created with debt, uncontrolled leverage, and uncontrolled buildup of credit. But maybe more importantly, which leads to a crisis and problems, but maybe more importantly underneath that is it's the advent of the internet and now these new technologies that allow the network to be the platform. So as opposed to federalism, where we have a centralized command and control like Washington, passing it all the way down through the state and then getting down to the town, it's really now what we founded the country on. It's about the power should be at the town, the money should be at the town or the city, mm-hmm. and it should roll up as federalism was really designed, not roll down. And I'm really not talking about the that's the change as opposed to being hierarchical. And whether it goes up or down, and by the way, you'll never see Washington ever relinquish it, so and because the power goes with money and they're not going to release the money, is we're going from, and for, if you remember your days of data processing, of hierarchical databases, mm-hmm. we move to relational databases, where it was the relationship is much more important than the hierarchy. And that's what we're starting to move towards. We went from those areas, distributed processing to our centralized processing to distributed processing. So the forms of governments, institutions, and everything else, the technology is there to allow it to happen. It's going to create that kind of network. And we're beginning already to see it in things like instead of the sovereign state, you see more and more regionals, like the EU as a region cross-border. I'm not using it as a great model, but a trade pact. So in Asia's got two or three of them that they've lined them up. South America's lined itself up. We had one, I think Trump may have imploded, but we have one in, with the NAFTA, with Canada, with Mexico, North American trade. So these trade structures are in many ways starting to replace sovereignty. And that is because the rules and regulations and controls, the borders themselves the network's making them disappear. Working is disappearing. That is controlled in a country. I every project I'm involved with, I have 6 or 7 people on the line and are all in different countries in different parts of the world. I'm sure you're the same way, Kerry. So how do you tax it? You know, the profits from it as a sovereign entity. How do you control and regulate it when it's out there on the internet? So long-winded, but that's where the new world order is going to. So new institutions that are going to handle that, okay, and how they would handle new forms of governance and how politicians themselves will make, will we have politicians or will they be forms of coordinators?
Robots. Maybe they'll be robots. How do you bribe a robot?
Well, that in itself begs a massive question because, the advent of, it's another one of the drivers, the advent of robotics. And we haven't seen anything, Kerry, with facial recognition, self-driving cars, where we're going with robotics is so significant. And the point here is it's killing labor, jobs, employment. Mm-hmm. I see a swath coming in retail of late retail layoffs because of the advent of kiosks and forms of robotics. But it's right across the board when you're talking about from drones in terms of self-driving airplanes. But they lead to, we create some jobs with them, no question, but they replace so many jobs. You know, when the data processing days, we were replacing secretaries and word processing centers, but we created, on the other hand, hundreds of thousands of new internet programmers and other kinds of professions that sprung from. That's not the same today. I mean, I sit here up here in New England, and biotech's the big center now up here. It was a place to all the high tech. When I was here, DEC had 400,000 people when I came here. Mm-hmm. Wang had 250,000. Data General, 100,000.
What's a Wang? Hold it.
I can go on.
What's a
but
Wang?
They're all gone.
What's a Wang?
Yeah, exactly.
What the heck is a Wang? They invented the standalone word processor. They were like a $1 billion company 30 years ago, and now my kids never heard of them. I almost forgot.
The only reason I noticed them is their headquarters building, which is now really an indoor mall, more or less, up here. But they had 200,000 people right up here in northern end of Boston. Now, the new companies now is biotech. My neighbor's in a big one. They got 800 people. Most of them have PhDs, but that's where are the jobs? And so that's a precursor to where it's going. And World Bank is saying that we're going to have to create 600 million new jobs within the next decade on basically 7.3 billion people in the workforce globally to keep the economy going. Where are those jobs going to come from, Kerry? And in this new world order, that is critically important because where's your tax revenue? Where's your growth? You know, does that mean you have universal income for these people that are not going to be able to be employed because the jobs aren't there?
I got the solution. Everybody is going to either be a podcaster or have a YouTube channel, and then they'll make money off of monetized ads, right?
Is that already happening?
Well, I think that's where we're headed, right?
Joey, I look at people who were writing 8 years ago on the web, and today it's just staggering. But it's, but here's the point: they're not making any real money, any big amounts of money. I remember advertising revenues, what I'd get on some of my websites from Google and Amazon, and it just disappeared years ago. We had to reinvent the business models on some of them. Yeah. Not some of them, all of them. But so the incomes. Because of the technologies have dramatically reduced and squeezed it. And you know, look what Amazon is doing right across any industry now. You know, the new adjective now is being Amazoned, or should I say adverb. So I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to explain that this is not a new world order where we're going to say this is, it may happen. It's happening as we talk. And the thing that's standing in the way is all of these old governments who just don't kind of get it. And in many ways, the elections we're seeing now, which are electing populist kinds of leaders who are speaking to the people and their needs, are getting elected. And some of them may not be good. I mean, Bernie Sanders in the last election was talking to the millennial generation about student loan forgiveness. And the next election, we'll have 73 million millennials now voting who've got a real strong belief in what should be done by the government. And these are not going to be the baby boomer generation that was raised closer to the Depression era parents of a little bit more frugality, an old concept called savings. I'm not saying the baby boomers were there, but were raised in it and then left it behind. But these new kids have no comprehension of that. So it's going to change the government, more socialism, if I can use that word, more things like helicopter money, et cetera. So I'm just trying to give you an idea of the things we're writing about and describing, you know, regularly and centered on this paper.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's definitely changes coming about and, you know, things have to change. There's like no question about it here, Gordon, because...
Well, that's what crisis is, Kerry. Yeah. Crisis is change trying to happen, and it's not being allowed to happen, and it never is really allowed to happen. It has to be forced. And so something breaks or a crisis happens, and then we all want the status quo, and that's what allows the decks to be partially cleansed. It's like why we have business cycles. Companies have to go broke to get better price discovery so that investment starts to flow in. So if you stop the business cycle by just putting credit, every time the economy starts to weaken, you get malinvestment. And eventually, because you haven't cleared it, you have mispricing of risk, lack of price discovery, and it collapses on its own. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's how it used to work. Right now, I wonder when we're 9 years into this current expansion.
Hey, so... just what the future looks like, really the guaranteed income has to become a reality because you're going to have 600 million new jobs required. Maybe they're off by 100 million one way or the other. That's a lot of new jobs. And the technology is getting to the point where basically it's just going way beyond human capabilities. And like you talk about recognition and just things like voice recognition is evolving at such a rate that all this data, you know, it's just remarkable that we're at this point now. And it's a revolution that's taking place that we've never seen the likes of. Just like the Luddites in England were smashing the looms because they thought automating the looms was going to be bad for employment. You know, maybe we should be smashing Alexas around the country.
Well, this is not an insignificant problem. This magnitude of employment that we're going to have to create, and the rate at which employment is going away, and as you just pointed out, the complexity that vast majority of the people do not have the ability to even begin to grasp it, or the education. And if they do get the education, it's so specialized today that they can have a PhD and not understand something because that level of that another profession is so far advanced. So where are the jobs to absorb the people that used to be, I'll call them the laborers, that were doing the menial tasks? They're gone. So what, you know, you'll say, well, there'll always be people who are just not cut out to study. It's not in their their nature. Right. Well, what are they going to do? Are they going to be forced to steal, to rob? I drive near some of the inner cities, and Baltimore, Chicago. So it's terrifying, and a lot of it is just the level of poverty. There's no way out. There's no employment. You know, I'm not trying to give them a free ticket here, but when it gets like that, the crime, they got no choice, and that's what forces the politicians and take some sort of action. But these are long-term problems, Kerry, in terms of solutions and trying to find answers to this. And we're not even talking about it right now.
Yeah.
All I hear every night is how good the unemployment rate, all-time low, how great the jobs are.
Yeah, well, we know.
But when I actually get inside and look at it, it looks like, we're hiring our bartenders and waiters.
Yeah, it's a great time to be a bartender, huh?
Yeah. Well, at least it was. I'm not sure the restaurants are doing that well. But the question is, where are the jobs, and what is the political world, what is the world order going to be about to absorb? Because they're going to force unemployed people, the students, etc., they're going to force change on the government, and they're going to force changes in the institutions to cope with it. Because a lot of the problems we have, Kerry, are because we're still operating like a sovereign government or a state without understanding. We know it's globalized economy. There's no, everybody understands it. We never planned for a globalized world with universal cross-border laws, cross-border, if you would, taxation, cross-border enforcements. Everything is kind of like a negotiate it with the next stovepipe sovereign nation. And that's slowing and that's impeding. Whereas the average citizen, they get on their internet and they don't even, like we said earlier, don't even know which country the guy's in that you're talking to that's going to do the work for you. You don't even care, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As long as he takes Bitcoin, you don't care.
Yeah, Bitcoin or some other cryptocurrency.
Or one of the other 100.
Thousands. 2000, over 2,000 the last time I bothered to count.
Is it that many?
3 months ago.
The last time I looked.
Once you get over 2,000, who really cares? It's meaningless nonsense. But some of them, just like the dot-coms, will actually wind up amounting to something. But hey, did you know that Amazon was going to be something 15 years ago, Gordon? They're going to be this behemoth that they are now? Or, well, Google kind of started out of the gate Fakebook. Couldn't have imagined that Facebook was going to turn into this. And, you know, the other thing is that these technology companies have power now, Gordon, that they never had before, power to shape minds, to toe the party line, to just really subtly brainwash the populace.
That gets right back into this new world order. Facebook and Twitter and the control that they have, whether intentioned or unintentioned, is staggering. It is political power. And people like Trump have figured that out. They know that this is where the real power are. And you just walk around and all the kids today, no matter, I watch it every morning, the donut line, there'll be 15 people and they're all got their heads down on their phone.
Yeah.
And that's where they're getting their news, their information and communications. We all know that, but the power of it is so important in steering the narrative and the opinions. And the belief system, the belief systems of people, the media used to do this. By the media, I'm talking about the print media and maybe the nightly news. But the millennial generation doesn't listen to the nightly news. Hell, it doesn't even turn on the TV set.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's getting it different. And again, this is 73 million people. That's about to enter the really aggressive part of their voting years. So that's between that's an age group between 18 and 33. I'm defining here. And so that's where they're getting their news and their opinions and sharing. Where's the political process in that? Well, now what they want to do is police what's allowed to be on the internet for fake news. That's not going to go over very well.
Well, that fake news button, I think Facebook had it for a while.
Yep.
Actually wound up more people reading the articles because, if Facebook says it's fake news, then I want to know what it is because it just might be real. Because Zuckerberg's idea of fake, having outfits like Snopes and PolitiFact and such others determine whether it's fake news or not, is false. And just look up on Snopes' Obama phone if you want to see a perfect example of the way they distort things Obamaphone, the program's been around giving out free telephones since the Rural Electrification Administration. And the deal was you charge a little tax so people in way out areas could have phone service. And Bush, 43, extended it to cell phones because, well, people looking for jobs, if they don't have a phone, then they can't be contacted and they won't be able to get jobs. And it was a relatively small program. And then under Obama, it swelled to billions of dollars, and it still might be that for all we know. We don't really know, but the people that own it are Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire, and Jeb Bush. He's a partner in the Obamaphone companies. And, you know, Snopes says, no, it wasn't true. There's no Obamaphone. I mean, come on. That's like there's no Obamacare either, right?
Doesn't Carlos Slim also own the New York Times?
He's reducing his stake in the failing New York Times.
That sounds like a Trump quote.
Yeah, I think I've heard it before.
But you know, and then you got Bezos that owns the Washington Post, and and I know for years the two papers that I always used as a source were the Washington Post and the New York Times, mm-hmm. because in fact they were the best coverage detail that I could find, and I would read their articles. Today I refuse to read either one.
Same here. Well,
because they are so politicized, mm-hmm. that, and the news is so, it's not news, it's propaganda. No. And that's how they those stellar organizations have completely ruined themselves.
Totally destroyed their brands.
Hey. In spite of the best brand in the world.
Yeah. The paper and, of record.
And so what's happening, and it's like on the Facebook, there's a crisis of trust in our politicians, in our news sources, and it's prevalent. And everybody I talk to of all generations are now speaking about it, whereas 4 or 5 years ago, if you mentioned that at a cocktail party, the people would just move on.
Yeah, they'd roll their eyes.
They'd roll their eyes. They would just leave you alone.
Well, also, the Times used to be written at a 10th grade reading level. Now I think it's probably 7th. The Wall Street Journal used to be at a college level. Maybe it's a 10th grade now. So everything's kind of deteriorated. Anyway, Gordon, we got to run now. So just tell us where we find your work.
Yeah. Thank you, Kerry. The site to go to is MATASII.com. And I encourage all listeners to sign up for the thesis paper. Give us your email address and tick New World Order or 2008 annual thesis, and we'll give you a copy of it.
All right. And I'm going to get a copy myself. And hey, got a question for Gordon on any of this New World Order business or myself. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com, Twitter feed @KerryLutz. You could tweet us. And the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Gordon, we'll catch up to you real soon. Have a happy new year.
Thank you, Kerry. Talk to you again.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.